100% black owned and operated.
They said it couldn't be done.
We did it anyway.
The hottest independent network in the world.
Kaboom!
You want prizes? We've got free prizes. You want cash? We've got lots of cash. Simply download Bashani Radio app. Allow push notifications and listen for your chance to win loads of cash. Please don't tell our CEO it's his money we're giving away. We won't tell if you won't tell. Bashani Radio app. Download it for free in the App Store.
Welcome to From Pain to Purpose Podcast with your host, Dr. Ava Eagle Brown, on Bashani Radio in New York City. Always talking about everything? Recycle your pain to live your best life. Listen on the Bashani app and syndicated worldwide on every platform where podcasts are played. Sponsored by TheMangoGirl.com with skincare products that will have you glow from head to toe. Go to TheMangoGirl.com.
This is Dr. Ava Eagle Brown with Pain to Purpose Podcast, live on Bashani Radio, coming to you all the way from New York City. And as you know, we're always talking about everything. I hope you enjoyed the last podcast last week. This week, I really want to take you into my life and I want to talk about mango. Oh my God. I don't know anybody who doesn't love mango. So we're going to be talking today about mango as the daily bread. Now, no, we're not talking about the Bible and the daily bread. We're talking about mango, the daily bread. Now, I don't know if it's because I sold mangoes on the train, you all, or because I'm called the mango girl. I actually love mangoes. And when people ask me, what's your favorite fruit? Like, seriously, it's mangoes. Julie mango, East Indian mango, common mango. Guys, I even eat the skin, you all. I love mangoes. Now, I don't know if that love for mango genuinely came from my childhood in terms of my life, my struggle, or because, and it's arguably so, that mango is a staple of the Caribbean and probably Africa too, and probably some parts of India. We love mangoes. It grows wild. It's eaten for dinner sometimes. We were just covered in all things mangoes. So these days I'm the mango girl. I have a brand called the mango girl. I'm just all things mangoes. But let me tell you how my relationship with mango started. I was about 10 years old and I remember my stepfather, who I love, like he is somebody I absolutely have a lot of love and admiration for. But my mom had a lot of children and he was working in the rice factory. At the time, we had rice growing in Jamaica. And he lost his job. And I don't know why. I don't remember. I just know he came home and everybody looked really sad. It's a one-room shack, remember? And as children, we used to go and pick mangoes in my little community. I grew up in a very deep rural area of Jamaica. And my mother, the children, we would go picking mangoes in the dark. Like, for those of us who live like in countries where you have winter and summer, you know that evening when 3 o'clock comes and everything looks really dark outside? We would get up and go to look mangoes in the wee hours of the morning, we call it in Jamaica. Now, there's no street light. And we used to carry torch, so we would take kerosene oil and we would put in the bottles and we would make a torch. Or we have something called Pini Wali. And for all you Jamaicans listening, you know what I'm talking about, which is called dragonflies for you posh people in other parts of the world. And we'd go to look mangoes, and mangoes grew wild, so we'd be trespassing in a way on people's property. But thankfully, nobody ever troubled us. And when my stepfather lost his job, my mom, I don't know even how it happens. Like, you know, I've done hundreds of interviews, probably thousands, and people ask me, and I don't remember. I don't remember if it was a discussion or what, but I just know that myself and many others from the community would wash mangoes. My mom would dress them. So we'd go and pick them. We'd pick all kinds of mangoes, and we would put these we call it a kata. So I'm going to explain. It's a piece of cloth that you put on your head to shield your head from the heavy weight of the basket or the bucket or whatever you carry those mangoes in. And my mom would literally come with us sometimes, and we pick the mangoes and we take them home, and my mom would wash them nicely, literally wash them under, you know, the pipe, and she would make sure they're really nice and they look really lovely. And she would pick the best mangoes and she would put them in a basket, and she would use newspaper, and she would make sure they're nice and secured because we're going to sell them to the market. Now, of course, we don't throw away anything because we were dirt poor. So the mangoes that were not so, appropriate to take to the market was left for us children. Man, I used to love those times because I would just sit there and just eat mangoes for lunch, breakfast, dinner, snack, you name it. But fun and joke aside, we'd go to the market, and I was about probably 9 years old or 10. I can't remember now, but it was a young child. It was before I went to live with my father. And we would go to sell mangoes in communities that were going to school. Or we would go to Balaclava in St. Elizabeth, and there was a train in Jamaica at that time, so there was a railroad, and we would sit on the Paisa, like a plaza, like a shopping center, like that shopping center and that space where you stand out and have your wares. So there'd be somebody selling mango, somebody selling bananas, you know, it's life in the Caribbean. And when the train came, I'd run over, leave some of my mangoes on the Paisa, and I would run to the train and I'd try to sell mangoes. And I remember there were moments in my life when on that train, people pitied me. You could see the pity. I'm a child. I was meant to be in school. There was mockery. There was scorn sometimes. And even people would formulate an opinion about you, and judgment would come. And I remember standing as a little child, really skinny at the time, because we were not, you know, I wasn't malnourished, but there was not any extra for dinner. So there was no leftover, no seconds. So we always scraped the little we had, and there was never enough. And I remember standing on that train sometimes and feeling like I just wanted to abandon the basket and run. I wanted to just run away. But I couldn't, because we were hungry and my family was home, and somehow I felt responsible. I felt like now the breadwinner. I felt like I had to be the one to step up. And I'm the first of 10 children, so I kind of just automatically slotted in there. And I remember sometimes you'd go on the train and you'd sell nothing. And it was very hard to go back home with the basket, so I would walk the town and try to sell it to anybody I could get. And when it came to like 3 o'clock and you didn't sell enough, you started reducing the cost of those mangoes, because even if you got $1, it was better than going home with the bag of mangoes. We needed to buy rice and flour and cornmeal and salt fish and whatever. And there were days when I'd take the train from Balaclava all the way to St. James. Now, as a child, through a child's eyes, that was far. And I'd walk up and down the carriages and I would be saying, "Mango, mangoes, anybody wants mangoes?" I mean, that's how I got the name Mango Girl. In Jamaica, Mango Gal. Patois, Creole, colloquial, vernacular, whichever word is best for you. And I remember being on that train sometimes, and I've never said this actually, but now that I'm going back into that space, it's coming to me. I used to feel afraid. Have you ever felt afraid? I felt afraid of not going back home, not being able to find my way back home, or feeling afraid that I might not sell enough mangoes to pay my way back. Because sometimes, to be frank with you, we only had enough to pay my fare to get to the location with the hope. And being the life coach I am today and such a positive person, I realized it was back then that I learned to visualize. Of course, I didn't know the word and the meaning of that word then, but it was there I learned the art of visualization. Because I'd go to sell the mangoes with no fear to go back home. And sometimes I was like 3 hours away from home. Like, seriously. For those who know Jamaica, I think about St. Elizabeth to Montego Bay is far. And I would make sure, I would tell myself every time, I have to get money to go back home. That's power, you all. That's the power of visualization. But I was learning these things as a young girl selling mangas. And there were days when I didn't sell much. And we'd go back home with the basket, and my mom would pick out that which she could find that was good for the next day. Or we had it for dinner. And sometimes when we went back home with the money, it was not enough. It was just enough to either pay the taxi fare back with a little bit. And I remember growing up, and for those of us who know me very well, I grew up without dining table. We didn't have dining table. We didn't have a good kitchen. We had a corrugated zinc kitchen outside. We had an outside latrine, which is an outhouse, an outside toilet. We didn't have any tissue. We had no running water. As a matter of fact, every morning we'd have to go and carry water from the community pipe up to our house on our head. And sometimes when I have headache now as a child, I keep saying, boy, you know, as an adult rather, I carried so much on my head that maybe some of those headaches come from all of that stuff I carried, because we carried water, we carried wood on our head for the fire, we carried mangoes, we were like donkeys carrying everything across the space. But in that space, there was a resilience muscle that was being strengthened. But we had no dining table. We would sit outside on the rocks and we would eat our food. And in my book, I explained that the dogs, we had a regular dog. So my kids are killing me to get dogs. And I'm like, no, dogs must live outside, because that's my concept of it. You know, I'm not saying those who have dogs inside is, you know, it's wrong. I'm just saying I grew up with, in the Caribbean, dogs are outside. And I remember describing it in the Mango Girl, my book, how the dog's breath would be mixed in your food, because you're eating, but the dogs are there waiting on the bones. And sometimes there's no bone to give the dog because you chew that bone because you're hungry. And I remember growing up like that. When we came home from selling the mango, sometimes there was just enough to buy cornmeal. And my mom would do something called turn cornmeal, which is literally getting the cornmeal, hot water, and, you know, mix it into this meal, this starch, just keep going around with her wooden spoon. And sometimes there was not enough to buy meat. So my mom would fry up, like, whether she had some leftover chicken fat, and she would fry it. And she'd pour the oil over the cornmeal, and that would be dinner sometimes. And sometimes that's hard to even reconcile in my head right now. Like, I grew up not wasting anything. I still don't waste. I hate to see waste. And I have a go at my kids all the time. Can you guys relate to that? Especially those of us who live in countries where we have such excess. I mean, the back of the bread. I mean, my kids would cut the bread and they'll cut off all the edges and they throw it away. And I get annoyed because back home, we didn't even have bread, you know, to eat. But mango was my staple. Mango was the thing that we lived on. Mango was what fed us sometimes. Mango was what looked after us. And in that mango life, we did not have much. It was a daily hand-to-mouth. I grew up living hand-to-mouth, going to school without shoes. We had one pair of shoes, and that one pair of shoe, we had one pair of shoe, and that one pair of shoe was for Sunday school. Like, there was nothing. So you walked to school barefoot, and the hot tar would hurt. It would be painful. And, you know, there was no lunch sometimes. And I didn't go to school all the time because I was busy selling mangoes. It's a miracle that I am who I am today. I mean, because God, like, I was regularly absent. I used to sell mangoes in the same, literally, 5 minutes walk, 10 minutes walk from my school. And the kids would mock me, and they'd come on purpose, you know. The kids would come on purpose. Innocent children, right? You know, when you're a child, you're so innocent. They'd come on purpose, and they would mock me and jeer me and taunt me. And I wanted to run and leave the basket of mangoes sometimes. I wanted to be in school. You know, school was an escape for me. And I wasn't there enough. And I must say that those experiences are probably why I'm the parent I am today. I'm relatively strict on my children. Education is a big thing for me. I work hard to make sure that they have as much as I can give. And I'm a single mother, so of course, you know, it's even more challenging. But I want to just give kudos to my mom and my stepfather because they did a good job. I mean, you know, I've come to realize now that, and some of you listening to this can realize that, that you serve from the place you know best at the time. And growing up, there were moments when I resented some things about my mom. And my mom and I have a great relationship now. And she's like the person I go to crying about everything. It was not always like that. But when I come back, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to tell you a bit about how my mom and I, you know, are today and how we mended that. So I'm going to take a break. I'll see you next second. So guys, I'm back. And I was telling you about my mom and I. My mom and I have a good relationship now. But, you know, for a very long time, I grew up resenting her for some of the mango selling. You know, I grew up resenting her for having a lot of kids. I just felt like, why do you have so many kids if you can't look after them? And then I realized that education played a major role in that. My mom was 16, and it was not until I was about 36 when she came visiting me in London that we had a good chat. And we talked about some of the things that bothered me, or some of the resentment I had, or some of the misconception, because through a child's eyes, you see things so differently about your parents. And then when you become an adult and you have some of those same responsibilities, you realize that, oh my God, like, you know, in Jamaica, we have this saying. My mom used to say it to me, and I'm going to say it in the Jamaican way because I'm Jamaican, you all. And then I'm going to say it in the English way. Whenever we did stuff or we were at the time judgmental of my mom, she would say things like, yeah, grew up, you will see. I come, you will see. Which meant that, which all she was saying was, you're coming. You're going to become a parent one day. You're going to become a mom one day, you will see. And sometimes we'd scoff and say, yeah, whatever. And I remember saying that to my children in September of this year, 2020, saying to my children, we went hiking in Northern Ireland. And I said to my kids, you're coming, you'll see. I was feeling some pain in my joints. And they couldn't comprehend much. Like, oh, mommy, you know, you're young or whatever. And I'm saying, don't worry, you're coming, you'll see. But when I became an adult, especially a parent, and I struggled with my children, I had challenges one way or the other. And some of the challenges I was having were things that my mother was challenged with, some of my siblings and I understood exactly what she meant. And are you listening to me now and thinking, oh my God, she's actually right, you know? There are things that I did to my mom and dad that wasn't so fair. And, you know, when I became a parent myself, or as an adult, I recognized that my parents were right. And I want you to actually pause, if that's you, and actually take a moment to go and reconcile that with your parents and even apologize, because they might be carrying some pain from that. Because sometimes we judge our parents. We judge them because we feel that we know best and we can do better. And until you see the struggle when you come on the other side, you don't realize. And I'm big on us recognizing where we went wrong, realizing where we can cause pain to somebody else, and trying to fix that. Because sometimes you'll be shocked at what an apology can do. So going back to my mom, when she came to London, we talked. And of course, the only thing my mom doesn't want to talk about is who's my dad, even till today. Like, she pushes it under the carpet. And I've gotten to the place where I don't push her anymore. It's okay. You're my mom. I love you. You did the best you could. I'm grateful that you brought me into the world. And I lowered my voice because it's something that's so touchy. It's so sensitive. It's so personal. And it's my mom, and I love her, and I want to protect her. But when she came visit in London, we talked about a lot of things. And, you know, my mom said to me, look, I did the best I could. And I have to just give her kudos. My daughter is 22, almost 23, and I can't even imagine her with a baby. You know, let alone a 16-year-old trying to navigate life. And I think the older I get and the harder I get with my own children, I have so much more appreciation for my mom, because she actually is a heroine to me. She carried 10 children into this world on barely nothing. And even mango selling, she was teaching me some skills of survival. And, you know, selling mangoes taught me resiliency, taught me how to, you know, deal with rejection. It taught me how to be bold and bright and audacious. it taught me how to bounce back. You know, I have a bounce back ability gene pool that I would not have had I not, you know, sold mangas. And some of us who are listening here today are going through some stuff in our lives, and we are probably resentful of the things. I want you to realize that everything you go through is for a purpose. It may not show up there and then. You may not even comprehend it in the moment, but everything you go through is there for a reason. And I always say, like my friend Audrey says to me, she says, you're either teaching or you're learning. And I think when you start looking at life that way, because when I was selling mangas, I didn't realize that I was both learning and grasping things that I was going to teach later. And today I can stand here very firmly and say mango being my staple food was one of the biggest things that ever, best thing that ever happened to me. It really has molded me into a strong woman, a formidable woman. I've got such strength and resiliency and that I never could have imagined that I would have had. And daily when I face challenges, I look back on where I have come and look back at how I've handled things. No, I'm not perfect. I still bleed. I hurt. But I have been able to appreciate mango being my staple food. I've been able to appreciate that my mother, in her simplicity, in her young age, adolescent, young motherhood, in her, you know, life, did the best she could. I realized that she was thrown lemons and she made lemonade. And sometimes you don't know how strong you are until all you have is to be strong. I think it was Bob Marley who said that. But mango showed me strength. It taught me entrepreneurial skills, you all. Like, nowadays I can look at something and instantly I can tell that, oh, that's a business, that you can do that, that you can do this. It taught me to be quick. Mango selling taught me to think on the spot. And there are some things that you go through in your life that are there to teach you valuable lessons, like mango did me, that it's okay to come from humble beginnings. Like, I can live in a palace, but I can also live in the dump. My childhood has taught me that. And my childhood, a big part of my childhood was mangas. Like, the selling of it, the eating of it, you know, living amongst it, living with it, living under it, being taught under mango trees. And I want you to actually take this moment and just reflect in your own life and find that thing that's your crutch, that thing that was there to teach you something, like mango did me. Mango taught me entrepreneurship skills, entrepreneurial skills. It taught me resiliency. It taught me the art of being somebody who is industrious. It taught me how to get on in groups, because we went to look mangas together, pick them together, go and sell them together. It taught me how to overcome my fear. It taught me independence. So although I was in a lot of pain from being bullied by selling mangas, I wanted to use this segment to ask you to reflect on that thing that you resented when you were probably younger or sometime in your life. But that thing that you got the opportunity to look back on and realize in retrospect that, oh my God, this actually came to teach me something. And my hope is that in that recognition, you could swap the pain to realize that it was part of your purpose. And that's what I did, because now I've been able to build a successful brand under the Mango Girl. I wrote a book from it. I have a brand from it. I'm called the Mango Girl. And I moved from being ashamed, literally ashamed of being called the Mango Girl or the Mango Girl, to actually swapping it. When people call me Dr. Ava Igu Brown sometimes, I'm like, no, I'm the Mango Girl, because I've not adopted that name and realized and wear it with pride, because as I've navigated this space called life, I realize that mango was my staple food and that mango was really, really good for me. And that I spent so much time being angry at it, being annoyed at it, that I did not realize the blessings that it brought me. I want you to pause and take a moment and write a letter to yourself. So I want you to get the journal out. And if you haven't yet gotten your journal, it's on Amazon. The link is going to be below. I want you to get your journal out and I want you to ask yourself, what is that thing that I carried around being angry at for such a long time, feeling pain towards? Mine was mango. I had a love-hate relationship. I loved to eat it, but it reminded me that I was bullied. I had to sell mangoes. I resented it. And it took me a longer time to realize that it was the thing that was good for me. What is that thing that you disliked, you hated, you carried around for such a long time, feeling angry about? And now you can actually pause to say, oh my God, you were my daily bread. I really would love you to share on social media, follow me and share, and let me understand, what is that thing? We want to have this conversation on Facebook, on Instagram, on social media, on Bashani Radio Networks. Come and follow us on social media and tell us. We want to hear it because that's part of the pain to purpose. That's part of the healing. We want to hear that. Let's celebrate that. Write a letter to that thing. Write a letter to yourself. Forgiving. Let's write a forgiveness letter to ourselves for being so angry at that thing or that person. And then acknowledging what that thing or person has done for you. Until next time, I'm just so excited that you joined me. Until next time, it is Dr. Ava Eager Brown with Pain to Purpose on Bashani Radio Network, a show that's focused on how people recycle their pain to start living their best life.
Welcome to From Pain to Purpose podcast with your host, Dr. Ava Eagle Brown on Bashani Radio in New York City. Always talking about everything? Recycle your pain to live your best life. Listen on the Bashani app and syndicated worldwide on every platform where podcasts are played. Sponsored by themangogirl.com with skincare products that will have you glow from head to toe. Go to themangogirl.com.
One hundred percent black owned and operated. They said it couldn't be done.
We did it anyway.
The hottest independent network in the world.
Kaboom!
You want prizes? We've got free prizes. You want cash? We've got lots of cash. Simply download Bashani Radio app. Allow push notifications and listen for your chance to win loads of cash. Please don't tell our CEO it's his money we're giving away. We won't tell if you won't tell. Bashani Radio app. Download it for free in the App Store.